Business Minds, presented by the Business Journals of Florida. Brought to you by TECO People's Gas, at the heart of Florida's energy. Cybersecurity is top of mind, and a Jacksonville-based company is taking it to another level. In this episode, Jacksonville Business Journal Editor-in-Chief Tim Gibbons gets the download from Chris Friedman, co-founder and CEO of OnDefend.
Starting out, probably a lot of our listeners are familiar with the company, but explain a little bit about what you do.
Sure. So we are an information security company. We live in the preventative sector of information security, where we help companies prepare for and defend against real-world cyber attacks. We have two primary divisions of our company. One is a services company that does things like assessments. We do penetration testing and adversarial types of testing. We help people comply with compliance standards. We do tabletop exercises, everything to help people prepare. And then in parallel, we built what Gartner would refer to as a breach and attack simulation product that automatically simulates through code ransomware, supply chain, like various threat actors targeting specific industries, to help companies like consistently practice and make sure they're ready.
Excellent. I want to talk more about that. That's Blind Spot, right?
That's right.
Excellent. Before we get to that, though, you have quite an interesting background. You know, serial entrepreneur, a diplomat for a couple of years, been involved in a couple of different businesses. What got you into the world of cybersecurity in the first place?
Yeah, well, you know, after my last venture, I was looking for an industry that intrigued me. I was looking for something I could do that could have a positive impact in the world. That was a big component, that not just a positive impact in Jacksonville, but a positive impact throughout Florida, throughout the United States, and throughout the world. Obviously, looking for an industry running toward us, not away from us. So I was looking at AI, AR, fintech. You know, happened to get to meet with President Obama's head of cyber under NSA. And that gentleman was a great person. He said, you know what, there's more IPs coming along every year, coming online, and none of them are secure. So this is going to be a great industry to become part of. And that is what inspired me to create OnDefend with my partner, Ben Fick.
So you started out more on the consulting, the testing, all that sort of thing. And the software came along a couple years ago. Talk me through that process. What had you decide to build your own tool like this?
We start off as a service company for a couple of reasons. One, revenue. We're still no funding, no venture capital. We're self-owned, which is a great position to be in. So we funded ourselves through the services company. The other thing, the other benefit of that was that you would work with customers, find a pain, a consistent pain across customers, and then try to solve that problem. And so we didn't initially start or were attempting to build a commercial product. We built a tool that helped us, what they call purple team, when we discover blind spots in companies' networks and cloud environments. And so we were asked by actually multiple chief information security officers of very big global national organizations. Chris and Ben, I love this purple teaming thing you do that's validating my controls, that's getting me operational assurance of what's going on in my environment. However, I really can't afford for you humans to do this, you know, on a regular basis, let's say monthly. I need you to build something that can automate that for us and then also provide some graphics that lay people, like the executives and board, can understand and value. So that's exactly what we sell. They did, and it was, I'll just add one thing. Unlike most SaaS tools out there that build assuming what the market wants, and then later they have to modify to verify, or once they verify, we actually built it in enterprise environments. We built it with the chief information security officer, the team, the CEOs, everybody's feedback on, I wish it did this, I wish it would report on this. And that's exactly what we built it. And the other thing we did is, being that we were consultants and from managed detection and response companies, we built it also friendly to partners that can also use the tool. So,
well, I know one of the big successes recently is BDO Digital. It added that to their Active Assure service. You know, having the validation of a company like that saying, hey, your tool is something their clients need, has to be a good feeling.
It really is. When we originally built this tool, we were obviously thinking of it as a tool that can empower a managed service to do breach and attack simulation for enterprise and mid-market customers. When you look at mid-market customers, we realized a couple of things. Our tool is being used by big global consulting firms, okay? And they were using this, let's say, during a tabletop exercise where they pretend an attack's happening, and they go around the executive table And they say, hey, everybody, what's the next step? And usually the first step, Tim, is like, oh, we saw the network defense teams. Usually like, sir, we saw the attack. We contained it. We're good. Let's go ahead and move on to the next step of the incident response plan. So we scoffed at that. So then when we gave our product to big consulting firms and they were running tabletop exercises, they would do the actual attack. Like, let's actually simulate the ransomware. The most eye-opening thing, Tim, was that the customer's MSSP, or managed detection response, their monitoring provider they pay for, they weren't calling. They weren't responding at all. Or if they did, it was like days later, the event was over. So the eye-opening thing with that is once the consulting firms were seeing that, guess what? Their MSSP, their MDR division, said, this seems like a very useful tool, so we don't have that issue. And so that's actually how BDO originally learned about it. And we've spent a great deal of time with them operationalizing it, just like we did with the direct customers, operationalizing it, creating features and go-to-market strategies for specifically MSSP and MDR providers.
I can imagine some people who really don't like you when you run the software and the call doesn't come that's supposed to come immediately. Yeah, I'm sure there's some uncomfortable conversations people have had with other service providers of, hey, you know, maybe this isn't working out so well.
Yeah, you know, our advice to customers or our partners, consulting firms to their customers is involve the provider, okay? Involve them in the attack. Let them know it's coming. We're not going to exactly tell you when, but we're just, hey, look, this is a team effort. Because guess what? You know, these monitoring providers, they rely on commercial security tools, Tim, like the CrowdStrikes and the, you know, the Microsoft Defenders and all types of tools. There's hundreds of them, right? Sometimes these tools don't always react like you think. There could be misconfigurations. There could be changes in controls by IT that nobody knew about. All these things in these dynamic environments can happen. So it's a team effort to find these blind spots and remove them. So we try to make it a team effort with the customer and their MSSP MDR provider as often as possible. It has the best result.
To talk to me kind of more broadly, you've been doing this for more than a decade, and obviously attacks have gone up. Ransomware has just become a fact of life. It seems that more frequently than one would like, you hear about some big company that got hacked. As you look around at kind of the state of the industry, how concerned are you that companies are, you know, either not secure or not doing enough or not taking it seriously?
The big stick for companies is compliance or industry standards, right? Or regulations. Now, compliance standards, often they say, you know, company, you should have these controls in place, okay? And a lot of times they'll attest, hey, we have these controls in place. The problem is that the companies then think they're secure, and that's not really true. You've got to verify those controls are working, not just once a year during an annual penetration test, but consistently testing and validating them, right? And that's exactly kind of what we bring to bear, is that ability to sort of do that. You know, we always joke around, would you prepare for the Olympics by testing yourself, you know, one time a year? Of course not. You can test regularly. So that is our sort of our goal, to empower companies through technology to regularly practice and become more secure.
Is there something that, I don't know, advice that you would have for business leaders who look at the headlines, who hear about situations happening? Is there advice that you'd have either on a mindset or actions to take that you wish more companies did?
It really depends on, I would call it, the maturity of an organization. Is it enterprise? Is it just sub-enterprise, mid-market, small business? Every different size of an organization has a different budget, has different requirements, different teams, and things like that. I think, first of all, employee awareness is a critical thing, because the heavy majority of all these cyber breaches start with a phishing attack, right? I think having some of these controls in place, you know, doing vulnerability scanning, doing your annual pen test, but also putting an EDR, right? Putting a SIM in place, having a managed detection response, having all these things in place and then regularly validating them. It's like Ronald Reagan once said, trust but verify. I think there needs to be the ability to more trust but verify the things you have in place are really working.
So all of those annual training that I have to do at work on, you know, when somebody calls up, don't give out your password, is actually, you know, I should take seriously.
Yeah, you absolutely should, you know. The thing about these attacks that's changed in our lifetime, right? Literally in the last 20 years, is the sheer volume, right? It's not some person offshore in a hoodie. This is bots, you know, doing basically mass mark email campaigns. And so they're not just targeting huge, you know, healthcare systems. They're targeting small businesses. Honestly, they're softer targets to get into. And then with the advent of AI, because AI is not just being used by Microsoft, it's being used by all these bad actors so that when the phishing email comes in and they're impersonating someone, it is getting hard to see that variation in syntax. It is almost, it's hard to really identify. So this whole landscape is going to be, it's going to get worse, frankly.
How scared are you as somebody who spends a lot of time thinking about cybersecurity? I mean, are you worried about the future?
I am worried about the lack of funding. So when you look at the landscape and you think about who gets breached the most, it's usually, let's say, critical infrastructure, municipalities, right? Cities. We just were on the news quite a bit. We just reported one here in Jacksonville Beach, right? The reason is, I mean, these are one to many attacks. Somebody gets in, there's all this data, right, of all the individuals in the city and the states. They're not funded properly. And that's not their fault. There's just not allocated funding. When you look at the financial sector, they're the best funded. Healthcare, you know, you start working your way down. And even that sometimes then, they're not fully funded. I think awareness is starting to come into effect. I wish there were more regulations and compliance standards that would hold to bear. That would empower a chief information security officer to get more budget. I'll be honest with you, our blind spot tool, half of what we do is we simulate an attack to expose a need for investment. Like you would not have caught Blackbuster ransomware in your environment because you don't have tooling for this. And so we enabled one of the largest airways in the world right before the World Cup to get a lot of investment right before the World Cup by doing exactly that, you know, and then they weren't breached in the World Cup. So I guess that's good news. But I would just summarize this for the business leaders. And I'm talking obviously to chief information security officers or chief information officers is they're looking for operational assurance. I've paid for this stuff. I have the team members. I have the best in class, everything. You know, I need operational assurance. It works because it's my job on the line, right? They're often being asked by their executives and their board, which may be many of your listeners, are we ready for these threats? They probably saw something in the news about a big ransomware breach happening to a competitor of theirs. They go to the, are we ready? They don't have the ability. We actually visualize, hey, no, we can emulate an attack by that very ransomware actor and show that they're ready. Like we can actually help with that. And then the last thing is there's a lot of pressure on the investments too. And we try to visualize the investments, show they're working. So we spend a lot of time trying to help business leaders, not just the technical security teams.
Chris Friedman joining us. Next, how to quantify the security spend when Florida Business Minds continues. People's Gas, working with businesses across Florida to lower energy usage and costs with efficient natural gas. Get cashback energy conservation rebates when you install new natural gas equipment. Learn more at peoplesgas.com/bizrebates.
It has to be hard if you're the information security guy and nothing has happened. Sometimes it's hard to make the case, well, I need more money because no, everything's fine. You know, why would I increase your budget? Because nothing's happened. It's like, well, my budget is what's making nothing happen. So, you know.
It's like qualify. Well, even like your, for a lot of the smaller businesses and medium-sized businesses that are your customer base, they have a third-party company they've outsourced to do that, right? The customer doesn't often have a quantifiable reason of why to leave that provider or why to keep them, right? It's usually qualifiable. Like, I think they're doing a good job or, you know, maybe I don't think they are. Like, you need to enable people to get quantifiable data. Like, no, I'm going to simulate attack and I'm going to know for sure these things are working. I think that's empowering to executives and lay people to cybersecurity.
So moving away from the customer base sort of side, talk about your company. So in Jacksonville, which has a growing tech sort of scene, as you look around, what challenges, what opportunities do you see locally, particularly thinking about on the hiring front? Do you have the workforce that you need here?
It's funny you say that. There's not a large enough workforce, especially with what we do, which is often very technical, minimum 7-8 years experience, certain qualifications, certifications. There's just not a large pool of red teamers and purple teamers, really in America. I mean, there's a systemic problem, frankly. I think that reinvesting in the communities, wherever you are as a cybersecurity company, to build or help the local colleges, right, and educational entities, build programs. I mean, this remote capabilities really help that, you know, but I think being able to build that from the ground up and then employ them or get them employed with your national network is really important. So it really starts at the ground up and there's really just not enough. I don't think there's enough awareness of students to go into this. I mean, this, if you think about this, this is where the money is, one. Two, with AI, I just, you know, unfortunately, I think a lot of certain jobs are going to start disappearing. This is very technical. This is very nuanced. I mean, you're going to have employment for a very long time in this field. So I think making the youth aware of that at an early age and then having programs in place to educate them towards that goal is critical.
So what advice would you have for, you know, college kid or somebody who recently got into the tech field who looks at what you do, sees the value of it, and says, okay, that's the career path I want to be on, or that's the career field I want to be in?
Well, you know, two things. Obviously, talk to people in the industry and understand what educational path would be most viable to what you're most interested in, mm-hmm. right? What certifications are the most impactful to you to be being employed. I'll be honest with you, I had a building construction degree from the University of Florida, okay? No kidding. And before I graduated, I actually interned in multiple places, including NASA, building an Atlas rocket complex.
You built a rocket complex, and then you interned at a building a cancer center or something like that.
But yeah, that's right. In Northwestern.
When I said earlier that you have an interesting background, I mean, those two projects both sound fascinating.
And then a prison in Golden, Colorado, really weird. But it was just what the purpose of that was. One, I wanted to get that ground experience, right? You know, I got to enjoy and interact with other places in the United States, which is also important to understand where you might want to live. But I worked in it. I got the experience. I worked with the other people. I understood it. And I came out of it saying, I don't want to do that. And so, you know, I would say to any student, get experience before you really fully enter the job force, if you can. Hopefully paid experience. Get experience and then let that direct your career, at least your educational path. I think as early as possible, get experience to understand if you're going to enjoy it. Also, it's not just about what you have a passion at. It's also what you have a knack for. It's also equally important. So I think that's really important to go out there and get physical experience in the workplace through internships as you're deciding your specific career path toward whatever goal it is you want. And I think honestly, with the advent of AI, the more nuance that it has, right, the more niche is going to be the better for you. So I would also think about that as you're selecting.
Wonderful. We talked a bit about your past and how you got here and what you're working on now. What does the future hold? What's next for OnDefend?
Well, there's going to be several really big announcements with us in the near future. So I have a feeling you and I will be chatting again here in the months to come. We are finding product market fit with our blind spot breach and attack simulation tool, specifically in the providing it, licensing it to consulting firms and MSSP and DRs. We are now offering a ransom or defense validation offering directly to customers, which we don't often do, with our team as a managed service. We're starting off, well, we're doing it nationally, but we're doing a big focus in Florida. We are partnering with one of the biggest hospital systems in Florida, which is going to be announced soon, that they're going to be the first healthcare system simulating ransomware against itself to protect its patients. Really exciting stuff. So we're looking forward to talking to you further about that. We are going to basically, I think we're probably going to target the financial sector, the critical infrastructure, the government, healthcare, things like that, that are the most important to secure and have the most to fear from ransomware. And I think we're just going to scale that. This other big announcement is going to be really interesting that I can't release that now to you, but it has a big impact with nationally for the United States, frankly. So I'll talk to you more about that. And then we also have some intellectual property around account compromise when somebody actually compromises your account. It's really hard to identify that as a recipient of whatever digital communication you have. We actually have IP, intellectual property, that allows you to verify who you're talking to out of band, just like out of band authentication when you log in. We have IP for out of band confirmation of any digital interaction that we're deciding what we're going to do with that intellectual property. We may partner with some of the bigger technology companies in the United States, or we might develop that out ourselves. That's to be determined.
Excellent. Well, in any case, it sounds like it will be exciting.
It will be. It will be. And I got to tell you, it is such a pleasure and joy to have you and the Business Journal, you know, supporting us. I mean, it has been really one of our biggest partners in Jacksonville. Really, you've been wonderful. The way you and your associates do in the state of Florida and around the nation, is just, we're all grateful for it. So thank you.
Wonderful. Well, it was great to talk to you today. Everybody did. I learned a lot, and it was a fun conversation. So I appreciate the time.
Absolutely. Well, I'll be back in touch with you soon about some of those other things, okay?
Absolutely. Thanks so much.
Thanks.
Thank you for downloading Florida Business Minds, presented by the Business Journals of Florida. Brought to you by TECO People's Gas, at the heart of Florida's energy.